Okay. It says Akiva Academy, the location. Okay, so today is the 11th of October. It's the 2nd of Mar Cheshvan. And Orna has made it, taken the Mar out of Mar Cheshvan.
Bidu.
So we are starting up our, I don't know how many years of learning Shmuel. And we are on Shmuel Bet Perek Vav. And this is a really good place to pick up because it is where David is retrieving the Aron. He's conquered Yerushalayim, and he's retrieving the Aron and bringing it to Yerushalayim. We're not going to get to that part yet. We'll see. So this, we're doing just half of the parak right now. There's no little paragraph breaks, so the next half is part of the same story. But what I wanted to focus on this week was a man named Uzzah. Has anybody heard of Uzzah? Okay, so we have Tanakh teachers. This is exactly why we have to do this. So my best friend from high school, who is a Mormon, which is the improper term, but I don't remember. It was in the New York Times, actually, about how newspapers will now refer to Mormons in their proper word, and their title's like 7 words long, so I apologize. I don't remember what the whole phrase is. And she asked me if I'd ever heard of Uzzah, and I hadn't, so I was just like you. And Uzzah is this character in their church that is referred to often because he represents the type of person that thinks that they can step in and control the world, that God needs their help.
See, he's the Kohen who reached out.
No, he's not a Kohen, but he is the one who reached out.
Okay.
And that was part of the problem. He wasn't a Kohen or a Levi. Okay? So so he reached out, and to think that the Aron was going to fall. And of course, the Aron is Hashem. I mean, it's not Hashem, obviously, but you know what I'm saying. It doesn't need help from any human in keeping it from falling, because Hashem's going to keep it from falling, because it's the Shekhinah there. Okay, so I was like, okay, we need to reclaim Uzzah, because he's ours. So that is the premise, and we're going to focus on Uzzah. And then next week, so we're going to focus on David HaMelech and how David takes responsibility for Uzzah having reached out, which is also really beautiful and amazing and just reinforces everything that we've been saying about David HaMelech in how he immediately takes responsibility as soon as he finds out that he had some part in whatever it was, as opposed to Shaul, which is what we spent a lot of the transition time between Shaul and David talking about in terms of Shaul's weaknesses and David's strength in that area of taking responsibility. Okay, so just one other word of introduction. If you see on the first page, I bolded in the Hebrew text, Avinadav. So this story, this parak in Shmuel, is the haftarah for Parshat Shmini. And in Parshat Shmini is Shmini is the eighth day, and it's the eighth day of the dedication of the Mishkan, when it is dedicated. And already I have two words that we're going to have to define a little, even though we know what they mean, is, and I did spend a whole shiur at some point last year talking about it, but we have Aron, and we have Mishkan. So the Aron is the thing with the Kruvim on top, and the Mishkan is the full structure. So in Parshat Shmini, it's a dedication of the Mishkan, and tragedy befalls when Nadav and Avihu, look at this word, Avi Nadav, Nadav and Avihu, take it upon themselves to offer a strange fire. So they also are interacting with the Mishkan, with the Aron, in an inappropriate way, and they're immediately struck down. And just to contrast there, Aron, their father, is silent, and he's praised for it. And the show goes on. The show must go on, right, in that parsha. And they're not mourned, and the dedication continues. And we're going to see David has the opposite reaction, and which is appropriate for David. So it's just that's a connection there as we read through it. Okay, so even if you just came for that, that was good enough, right? Okay, so now... I just want to give you the history of the Mishkan and the Aron, okay? So first, the Mishkan. So the Mishkan, they crossed over the Jordan River, and right across the river was a little city named Gilgal, which is where Israel encamped as they set about conquering all of Eretz Canaan, and that's where the Mishkan was. And then, according to commentary, B'nai Israel got a little too complacent in Gilgal, they were a little too comfortable. They had all their kosher restaurants and, you know, their shatness checkers and everything you need in a community. And so Yehoshua made the executive decision to move the Mishkan from Gilgal to Shiloh, which is a little further north in the territory of Binyamin, so that everything would move northward, and with the hope that the conquering of Eretz Canaan would also move northward. Okay? And now Shiloh, that is where it says Samuel 1, chapter 5. I did all this in English, just to go through it quickly. This is a war with the Plishtim. And this is the famous war where Eli dies upon hearing the death of his two sons, and the name Ebenezer comes from here. Ebenezer, that's the place it was. And everybody dies, and Ikavod, one of Eli's daughters-in-law, names her son, who's born upon hearing about all these deaths, Ikavod, which is Ichabod Crane, like all these biblical names. Mm-hmm. And the Plishtim, so in this war, the Bnei Israel had this quote-unquote brilliant idea. I have a whole share on this. I think it's on YU. But I didn't label it, of course, so you wouldn't be able to find it. That they had this brilliant idea that if they brought the Aron out with them, it would help them in the war. But what they didn't know is that the Aron only helps you if you are observing the mitzvot. And if you remember, Eli's sons did not go in his path, and they're accused of doing atrocious things that the Rabbanim say they didn't really do. It's just to give you a sense of how atrocious, of sleeping with women when they come to bring their korbanot after pregnancies. But the rabbis interpret it that they were just delaying them and not allowing them to go back home and be with their husbands. So you have this tragic time in the period. This is where Shmuel then emerges from this, right, to become the leader of the Jewish people, because Eli and his sons weren't taking after him. So they bring the Aron. So they're separating the Aron from the Mishkan in Shiloh. They bring the Aron out in their war with the Plishtim. And the Plishtim not only win the war, but they capture the Aron. And then there is this comic story of the 7 months that the Aron was with the Plishtim, where their gods are breaking down and falling, and the Plishtim are getting hemorrhoids. And it's just like, it's really, I think a lot of rabbis would say that it's Shmuel Hanavi's attempt at humor, and it's successful because it really is a funny story. So then what do? They put it on a cart, and they have cows lead the Aron on this cart into Israel territory. And it lands in Beit Shemesh. Okay? And that is chapter 6. So I'm just telling you outside. You can read it, all the things if you want for it. And you see, if you just skim, you see the word hemorrhoids a million times in the English. So in Beit Shemesh, the people treated the ark frivolously. They didn't treat it with the seriousness and kavod that it needed. And so you can see that... if you look at page 3, he smote the people of Beit Shemesh, for they had gazed upon the ark of the Lord, and he smote of the people 70 men, 50,000 men, and the people mourned. So 50,000 and 70, and obviously there's lots of midrashim on why the numbers are separated that way, died in this horrible incident of them not treating the Aron with kavod. Okay, and so then they send a message to the people of Kiryat Yarim, which is modern-day Telshtone. I was listening to one share about this. I assume that the rabbi giving the share lived in Telshtone, and another rabbi in the yeshiva where he was teaching lived in Beit Shemesh, and he said, see, the people of Beit Shemesh weren't firm enough. It had to come to Telshtone. So then it stayed in Kiryat Yarim until David comes to take it up, okay, which I think... I forgot the exact number, but it's around 20 years. I think we actually might have it. So that's the story of the Aron, okay? And, here I have the map for you. So the map traces it. So number 1 is Shiloh, do you see? So it skips the Gilgal part. And then number 2, Evan HaEzer, that's the site of the war. And then number 3 is when the Plishtim give it back on their cart to Beit Shemesh. And then it gives you the whole journey in the Plishtim territory, which you can read about. And then, I didn't say Beit Shemesh. No, Ebenezer, right. And then the Plishtim send it to Beit Shemesh. And then the people of Beit Shemesh send it to carry Urim, right, where it remains for 20 years. And then David, we're not going to get to it today, but we are going to get to Oved Adom today, where he leaves it until he comes back to bring it to Yerushalayim. Okay, now, the Mishkan, in the meantime, started out, obviously, in Gilgal and Shiloh. And then when the Aron was separated from it in Shiloh, so while it was kidnapped by the Plishtim, Shiloh was utterly destroyed by the Plishtim in this war. Okay, completely desecrated. And this is hinted, this was the only thing more serious than the destruction of Shiloh was the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, because this was essentially serving as the Beis HaMikdash during those times. So this was very serious. It's mentioned in Tehillim. It's actually not mentioned in Shmuel, this utter destruction, which is really interesting. And from Shiloh, it's moved to Nov. Does anybody who's been coming to my class remember about Nov? What horrible, tragic event happened in Nov? Kohanim. Right. Nov was the city of Kohanim, which harbored David while he was fleeing from Shaul, when Shaul was trying to kill him. Mm-hmm. And Doeg, who was this horrible man who betrayed David and essentially also betrayed Shaul by giving false information, because he said he saw David there and that the people of Nob helped him, and he embellished it. And so Shaul then had Doeg kill everybody in Nob. Yeah. And it was contrasted at that time to Shaul's failure in destroying everything of Amalek, that he left some people live. And it's the same language that men, women, and children were all killed in Nob. There was one Kohen who survived Nov and fled with David. And so from Nov, the Mishkan then went to Givon. And it's not going to be reunited in Yerushalayim from Givon until Shlomo HaMelech builds the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? So those are our terms. So right now in our parak, we're just dealing with the Aron. And so just have in mind that the Aron obviously is very important, but we need the whole Mishkan united in the building of the Beis HaMikdash, and that have in the back of the mind where the Mishkan is. And the Mishkan is where they would bring all the Korbanot. It included the Bama, the altar, so that's where Korbanot would be given. And the Aron, obviously it's scary, you know? So also just to have in mind, in terms of these stories, that the Plishtim just got hemorrhoids, okay? Beit Shemesh, 50,070 people were killed for the way they treated it. So you have a real contrast, and you also see, in a certain sense, Hashem's pedagogy and mercy at the same time in terms of the punishment for the Plishtim because they didn't know any better versus the punishment for the people of Beit Shemesh, and we'll see Uzzah, who should have known better, okay? Okay, so now let's go back to page 1, and let's start reading. So, Vayosef od David et kol bachor b'Yisrael 30 aleph. So David continued to gather all the chosen of Israel, 30,000, and it's continued because there was a gathering in Hebron when he was anointed for the second time as king, after his first secret time being anointed by Shmuel Hanavi. Okay. Okay, so Vayakam Vayelech David v'kol ha'am asher ito mibale Yehuda la'alot misham et Aron ha'lokim asher nikra shem Hashem tzvakot yoshev hakruvim alav. Okay, so now David went up and he went, and the entire nation that was with him, from all the heads of Yehuda to go up to there, it's actually Bale Yehuda is a name, I apologize, to bring up to there the Aron of God that was called Shem Shem. Obviously, we're going to talk about that, of Hashem Tzvakot, the Lord of Hosts. Remember, Chana is the first one to call Hashem that, which had the Kruvim sitting on top of it. Okay, the only previous time that it's referred to with all this fanfare is when they bring it out in the war with the Plishtim when it's kidnapped. So this is like a huge event. Everybody's gathered. It's like David already defeated the Plishtim, and now it's reclaiming what they haven't really reclaimed because they were too scared all this time. Ve'arkivu et Aron Elokim el agala chadasha ve'yisa'uhu mi'beit Avinadav asher b'giv'ah ve'uza ve'achyo b'nei Avinadav nohagim et agala chadasha. Okay, so they put the Aron of God on a new wagon, and they carried it from the house of Abinadav that was in the Giv'ah, and Uzzah and his brothers and the sons of Avinadav were driving the Agala, the new Agala. Okay, so does anybody know? We're going to talk more about this next week, but does anybody already know what's wrong with this picture? It shouldn't be in a cart, right? Who's supposed to carry?
Supposed to carry the Levim.
The Levim, exactly. And it's very interesting. We'll talk about this next week. You'll see the sources. But Kahats, B'nai Kahat, who are in charge of the holiest of holies, they were dafka not given agalot wagons that every other of the sections of Levim were given, because the people who carried the beams and the bars and the curtains and all those kinds of things that were peripheral to the Aron, they actually received as gifts agalot. And B'nai Kahat did not, because they couldn't use the agalot. Okay? But why do you think, why would it have occurred, based on the other story we read, that this is how David would have it be carried? Because remember, the last time David knew, it was the Plishtim who put it on an agala. Okay? So that's David's last, that's B'nai Yisrael's last sight of the agala, I mean, of the Aron on an agala. Okay, so it's not from nothing that he did this. Just like even the Egel HaZahav, like where did they get this notion of an Egel? Why did they choose an Egel? So Rabbi Ari Kahn speaks about that at the splitting of the sea. It says, there's a Midrash that says that a Shifcha saw what Yechezkel, that's actually the Midrash, Rashi just says a Navi. Midrash says Yechezkel never saw, and Yechezkel's, of course, famous Merkava chariot sighting, where each wheel represented a different thing. So they make a comparison that B'nai Israel at the splitting of the sea must have seen something like Yechezkel saw, and each of the wheels that Yechezkel saw on this Merkava was a different face of an animal, and so that's where they got the idea of an eagle hazahav. So now this is where they get the idea of a cart from the Plishtim, because they put it on a cart. Okay, very good. V'David v'chol Beit Yisrael mesachakim lifnei Hashem b'chol atzei brushim uv'chinorot uv'nivalim uv'tufim uv'mananim uv'tzeltzalim. Okay, so David and all the house of Israel were mesachakim lishok, playing. Okay, it's not such a nice word. It's not such a nice word. So we could already be having an editorial commentary on how, on what the festivities were like, and maybe even a little reminder of Beit Shemesh, but not really. So before Hashem, and then look at the instruments they're using. These are all different instruments. So they were cypress wood, harps, psalteries, timbrels, sistra, cymbals. Okay, but these are dafka, not the instruments that we usually associate with the Aron. There's no chatzotzrot, trumpets. There's it's weird names of instruments, except for the kinor and the tupim. We know tupim from the women with their tupim after the splitting of the sea, but they're unusual instruments. They're not the traditional instruments that we would see the Levi'im with and the Aron.
It says David v'chol Beit Yisrael.
Uh-huh.
So it's everybody, the simple people. And
yeah, it's everybody. Right? Yeah, it's everybody.
That's because, I look at the instruments. Manani,
yeah, absolutely. Like they brought, yeah.
Tzeltzalim, so I'm thinking the simple people, everybody came to, and that goes well for me with the Mesachakim, that, you know, I don't know if anybody goes to Yerushalayim, goes to the Kotel every Monday, Thursday,
yeah.
When you take bar mitzvahs to. Also, it's like all the tupim and
yeah.
all the
that's amazing. Yeah. Yeah, so it's everybody involved. Right. Good. Vayavo ad Goran Nachon, Vayishlach Uza el Aron Halokim, Vayochezbo, Kishamtu Habakar. Okay, so they came to this Gor HaNachon, and Uzzah stretched forth his hand to the Aron of God, and he held it because the oxen had swayed it. Okay? Vayichar af Hashem b'Uzzah, vayakehu sham ha'lokim al hashal, vayamat sham im Aron Elokim. So Hashem got very angry with Uzzah, and he smote him there, God. And I couldn't find any commentaries here, but just note that it's Yudke Vavke that gets angry, and it's Elokim that smites him. So it's almost like Hashem had to overcome his midah of rachamim and say, no, justice needs to be served here. This, I need to send a message out. This needs to be the midah of din. And it says, shal, so it's translated as hashogeg, the mistake, recognizing it's a mistake. And he died there with the Aron of God, of Elohim. Okay? And then, Beichar le David, al asher paratz Hashem peretz b'Uzzah. So then we have, and this is a difference, so the in Zion, when Hashem gets angry with Uzzah, it's Vayichar af b'Uzzah, but here David, Vayichar le David. So David's, he's, how does it translate it? David was angered, but it's more, it's with himself. And it says, b'Uzzah, Vayichar, al asher paratz Hashem peretz b'Uzzah, because Hashem had broken, had made this break, this breach with Uzzah. Vayikra lamakom haihu peretz Uzzah. And he calls the place the breach of Uzzah ad hayom hazeh, even until this day. And then, this is what we're going to discuss next week, but to read the psukim, vayira David et Hashem. David was afraid of Hashem. Now, this is also very unusual. What emotion do we usually associate David with Hashem? Love, right? Not yira, but love, ahava. Bayom hahu on that day. We'll discuss more next week. Bayomer ech yavo el Aron Hashem. And he says, how can the Ark of Hashem come to me? V'lo ava David la'asir elav et Aron. And David didn't want to remove the Aron. Now just imagine, and this is totally the opposite of the parsha that it's attached to of Shmini, where the show must go on. Here, the show stops. I mean, it was this, like, amazing, everybody's there, they're playing their music, everything, and cut. And everyone just, and David says, it's not moving from here. Al-Ir David, he didn't want to bring it to the city of David, Yerushalayim, Vayateo David beit Oved Adam Hagiti. So he takes it aside to the house of Oved Adam Hagiti, and it's going to stay there for a few months. Okay, so now let's go into our commentary. So starting on page 4, and we have to look at Divrei Hayamim adds some pieces. I started noticing when we started Shmuel Bet that in order to understand the events in Sefer Shmuel, you really have to go to Divrei Hayamim. And it's not, Divrei Hayamim is usually seen as just a book of chronologies and names, but really there's lots of stories here that supplement it. So the first thing that we're going to look at is... So the psukim, Vayomer David, the kol kal Yisrael, im aleichem tov, umin Hashem Elokeinu, nifretza, nishlecha alecheinu, anisharim b'kol arzot Yisrael, v'mehem hakohanim, v'halevim, barei, migrashehem, v'yikbetzu eleinu. So here, he's almost like getting buy-in from the people. David said to the entire congregation of Israel, if it pleases you, and from the Lord our God it has been opened, let us send to our brothers remaining in all the lands of Israel, and with them the priests and the Levites. So here we are including priests and Levites that we didn't talk about in Shmuel, in the cities of their open land, and let them gather to us. So he's almost inviting everybody, that it's buy-in, that this is what we're doing as a nation. It's really the first act David's doing is with everybody, besides war, in terms of bringing everyone together. V'naseva et Aron Elokeinu aleinu, and will bring the Ark of God around to us. Ki lo derashnuhu b'mei Sha'ul, because they didn't do it in the days of Sha'ul. So here, it's almost as if David is critiquing Sha'ul, that he, why didn't he care? Why didn't Sha'ul do this? Why didn't he care? Now, obviously, he gets his lesson that he can't be Gaivadik about what Sha'ul didn't do, because he also gives up on it, right? He also stops in his tracks and he recognizes then why Sha'ul didn't do it. Vayimru kol kahal lasot kein, and we see the buy-in from all the kahal to do this. Ki yashar hadavar beinei kol ha'am. So they, all the kahal said, let's do this because it was a good thing to do in their eyes for all the nation. Vayakel David et kol Yisrael min shichur Mitzrayim ve'ad lavo chamat laviat aron elokim mikiryat yarim. So David gathers all of Israel from Shichur Mitzrayim, which the commentary says is the Nile River, ve'ad lavo chamat, until the other end of Israel, which is also the place where the spies went when they were exploring Israel.
Is to Chamat Gadol, all the way up north?
No, I think it's, no, I don't know if it is. Actually, I don't know. Maybe. To bring the Aron of God from Kiryat Yarim. Okay, so we see from Divrei Hayamim, we're just adding a little bit more of the nationalistic day that this is going to be. And also this little slight critique of David on Shaul. Okay, so so Rashi says what I said before about gathering them and coronating. Since the coronation, it's the second gathering. Bale Yehuda, that was mentioned before, is Kiryat Yarim. Sorry, I didn't mention it there. Okay, and then the next Rashi. So if you remember in the Pasuk, when we were describing the Aron, it said in Pasuk Bet, if you look at page 1, it says that was called Shem Shem Hashem. It repeated that word, Shem. So Rashi explains that the name, it's still the name was called upon the Ark. Even though the Ark had been exiled to the land of the Plishtim, this name did not leave it because it was hallowed. So having been with the Plishtim for 7 months had no impact on the holiness of the Aron, and that's what's being stressed in the way it's called.
It's so strange, like, did David not consult with any kind of, like, rabbinic authority?
Right.
Like, it's like, maybe they don't remember so well, but I mean...
Yeah, no, it's very strange. It's very strange, but we're going to see David takes full responsibility, and he fixes everything. Okay. So now, just to explore Uzzah. We're going to read this long Gemara in English. So it's talking about the Aron. So it's from Masechet Sota. It follows that the Ark and its bearers and the priests were on one side of the Jordan, the east side. So this is when they're originally coming into Eretz Yisrael from the other side of the Jordan River. And the rest of the Jewish people were on the other side, the west side. Subsequently, the ark carried its bearers in the air and crossed the Jordan. Okay, so this is the opposite of what Uzzah did, where Uzzah thought he had to protect it. As it's stated, when all the people were completely passed over, the ark of the Lord passed on and the priests before the people from Joshua. And over this matter, Uzzah was punished. So they knew, they had in this tradition that the ark's powers, the Aaron's powers, for not taking proper care of the ark, as it is stated, and when they came to the threshing floor of Chidon, Uzzah put forth his hand to hold the ark, for the oxen stumbled. The Holy One blessed, we said the oxen swayed before. The Holy One blessed be he said to him, Uzzah, the ark carried its bearers when it crossed the Jordan, all the more so, is it not clear that it can carry itself? Okay, the verse states, and the anger of the Lord was kindled against Uzzah, and God smote him there for his error. Hashal, Shoshi, that's what it says. Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar disagreed over the interpretation of the verse. One says God smote him for his forgetfulness, Shalom, because he did not remember the ark can carry itself. And one says God smote him because he lifted the edges, Shulaim, those are like the hem, which sounds like Shalom, Shal also, of his garment in front of the ark, and relieved himself in his presence. So one is they're sort of opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of what Uzzah may or may not have did. One is honoring it too much to the point of thinking it needed its help to completely disregarding it.
Where did they get that from? The puzzle?
Well, Shal, because it's weird. It's so weird. Oh, Shoshi didn't know it, right?
No, Shal is like a...
Shikmiya.
Yeah.
Right, but that's... Yeah. Is that based on the English word, though, Shal?
Maybe.
Yeah, so I don't know if it's a like Hebrew word. Yeah, the shawl ladies. The shawl ladies in Israel who are so modest. So on one hand, either he's honoring it too much that he thinks that it needs his help, or he's like the people of Beit Shemesh that are not honoring it enough and sort of looking at it as just like an everyday object instead of the holy object that it is.
Yeah, but it's an instinct. It's, moving a little bit.
And that's the message that Hashem had to get across, that when it comes to holy objects of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we have to control ourselves and our instincts. And also our bodily functions.
Oh, that's for sure. That's upsetting to me to even think that
that's what he's doing. Okay, so the verse, but then to give a good end to Uzzah, the verse states, remember it said he died there with the Ark of the God, Im. So Rabbi Yochanan says Uzzah entered the world to come. As it is stated, with the Ark of God, just as the Ark exists forever, so too Uzzah entered the world to come. Okay, and then we get to David a little, which I think I'm going to... Okay, no, we'll read it. Ravitat, for what reason was David punished with Uzzah's death? He was punished... Oh, so the next page, page 6, we're on the last page. Because he called matters of Torah songs. As it is stated, your statutes have been my songs. So he's calling statutes. It's just... I just want to find it in the pasuk.
Oh.
So it's the pasuk, it says... Zmirot hayuli chukecha. So he's calling chukim zmirot. Okay? So have in my songs in the house of my pilgrimage. The Holy One, blessed be he, said to him, matters of Torah are so difficult and demanding that it is written, will you set your eyes upon it? It is gone. From Mishlei. One whose eyes stray from the Torah, even for a moment, will forget it, and you call them songs? For this reason, I will cause you to stumble in a matter that even school children know, as it is written with regards to the wagons brought to the tabernacle, and to the descendants of Kahat he did not give, because the service of the holy things belongs to them, they carry them upon their shoulders. And although the ark clearly must be carried on people's shoulders, David erred and brought it in a wagon. Okay? So again, didn't he consult with somebody? So this is why he was put in this position for making the silly mistake that even school children know better, because he didn't respect Hashem or his statutes as chukim enough to refer to them as zmirot.
That's so interesting, and we still say this to him. No, I mean, like...
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's
kind of weird, like God's like, I don't really like this line.
And right. But, right, that'd be interesting. Yeah, I should go into that and see what the commentaries say about that. Yeah, you're right. Okay, so when the Plishim returned the ark during the period of Shmuel, it is stated, and he smote of the men of Beit Shemesh because they had gazed upon the ark of the Lord. The Gemara asks, because they gazed upon it, God smote them? Why did their action warrant this punishment? Rabbi Abahu and Rabbi Elazar disagreed with regard to the interpretation of the verse. One says that they were punished because they were reaping their crops and prostrating themselves at the same time. In other words, they did not stop working in reverence of the ark. Like, how many of us, even this morning, like when we're saying brachot, are running around doing things because we can? I mean, we wouldn't do it during Shemona Esrei. That would be a problem. But in your morning davening, like, you know that some things are less serious than others, so you're doing whatever you're doing. So this was a Shemona Esrei moment where they should have known better. The Aaron is coming into Beit Shemesh, and yet they're, like, bowing while they're still reaping. Okay, so, and one says that they also spoke denigrating words. Okay, and I didn't go on to that. Okay, so now let's just read a few more commentaries on it. Batecha kol avodat ohamoid. So here is where they completed in Parshat Pekudei, so the end of Shemot. They finished, and it's a Tzur Hamor, who, I didn't give you biographies, but he's a medieval Bible commentary. So it says above, every person who had wisdom in his heart did, and also says that Bitzala did. So it looks like humans are actually doing the work, but it's not true. So the Torah Mora is saying, this malacha in going into the Mishkan, this work, was so deep and that it was beyond the seichel, the intellect of man, to complete it and to do it. V'kol shekein ki hi malachat ha-kodesh v'hi na'aset me'atzma b'koach yad Hashem. So it's holy work, and it was actually done in and of itself with the strength of the hand of Hashem. Ke'omram be'oron nos'av noseh atzmo lo kol shekein. And then he quotes what we read in the Gemara about the Aaron carrying itself. V'zeh haya avon Uzzah. And this was the sin of Uzzah. And that's why it says here, and all the work of the Ohel Moed was completed, as if it was finished in and of itself, like the way of all holy things. And it's also, we have the same language in Bereshit, in creation, that the work of the heavens and the earth were finished, as if they were finished in and of themselves. And that's the truth, that they were all finished and completed with an utterance and not with any touching. Okay? So we really see here that the way that Surah Mora is describing the completion of the Mishkan, that it was done through Hashem, and everybody recognized that even though humans may have helped and done certain work, Hashem could have done it without them. And that's the sin of Uzzah, thinking that Hashem actually needs his help. Okay? The next source describes the relationship between the Haftorah and the Torah portion. So the Parshat Shmini, Maftirin B'Shmuel, B'Yosef O David, so Shmuel, what exactly we said, that we do the Haftorah for Shmuel. For those of you who have never seen the word Haftorah in Hebrew, it's just interesting to see that. We always pronounce it Haftorah, but Torah actually has nothing to do with the word Haftorah. You see, it's a tet, it's not a taf. It means to complete. V'hi shaycha l'parsha zo, and it's related to this parsha, mipnei sheyesh ba'inyan peretz Uzzah, because it has a whole matter of the breach of Uzzah, shekarav yoter midai el aron elokim v'ne'anash alef, because he got too close to the Ark of God and he was punished for it. V'hu domeh l'mitat nadav v'avihu shehikrivu esh zara lifnei ha'elokim v'ne'anshu alav mita. And this is similar to the death of Nadav and Avihu that got too close, that brought the korban of the strange fire before God, and they were punished with death also. Okay, so the Malvim then to lead us into what we're going to do next week. Vayichar le David, mizeh hevin David ki lo hizaru bekavod ha'aron kera'ui. Here we learn, when we see that David is angered, we see that David realized, he understood that he wasn't careful enough with the honor of the Aaron as was fitting. V'charaf lo al atzmo, and he was angry at himself. Ki zeh ha-hevdel bein vayichar af sheyotze lezulato, ubein chara lo sheshav al atzmo. And this is the difference between anger that is directed outside of yourself to anger that returns to yourself. Kamo, like in Bereshit, Vayichar l'Kain vayiplu panav. So Kain, when his korban is not accepted by Kadosh Baruch Hu and his brother Hevel's is, he also turns his anger inward. V'amru Chazal shenishtanu panav kecharara. And Chazal have a midrash, which I actually skipped in the Gemara, that his face became blackened like bread. Okay, more on the Malbim. Vayira David et Hashem bayom hahu. And David feared Hashem on that day. Peresh David avad tamid me'ahava u'misimcha. David always served God in love and happiness. Ve'avoda kazot tarik abaleha shefa hachesed v'rachamim tov v'simcha. In this type of work, in love and happiness, it flows the chesed and the rachamim and the tov and the simcha. But on that day, when he was trembling from the fear of the punishment that befell Uzzah, nafal mi madrigat ahava el madrigat yirat ha'onesh shehi madrigat pichuta. He fell from this high level of love of God to the level of fear of sin. It's sort of the difference when your child doesn't do something.
Fear of sin or fear of punishment?
Punishment, yeah, punishment. So it's like the level of a child, and you see the maturity of a child when he doesn't do something because you're around and he knows he's going to get yelled at, versus he doesn't do something even when you're not around because he loves you, which is a relationship we hope to cultivate in our children and what Hashem hopes to cultivate in us. So he goes to this lower level. V'alkein amar eich yavo elai aron Hashem, and that's why he says, how can the Aaron of Hashem come to me? Im ba'asher hirgish ki nafal mimadrigato. It's like he felt himself go lower. Im ba'asher ra'ah shemitnaheg im Kravel Aaron Uzo Bedin Uvapachad. Because he v'kol ha'karev al kedushatan yamot. So he is, since he saw the behavior with getting near to the Aaron and its strength with din, justice and fear, and anybody who gets close to its holiness will die. Okay, and then Rambam actually learns the halacha from, and he quotes our story. So be'etcha malichina ta aron mimakom lemakom. So the time when we bring the aron from place to place, ein malichino to lo al ha-behema velo al ha-agalot. You can't bring it on any kind of animal, on any kind of carriage. Ela mitzvah lenot lo al ha-katzaf. Rather, you need to carry it on your shoulder. Ulefisha shechach David v'nas'o al ha-agala nifratz peretz ba'uza. And since David forgot, and he put it on the agala, this whole breach of Uza occurred. Ela mitzvah linos'o al ha-ketef shenemar ki avodat ha-kodesh aleihem b'ketef yisu. And he quotes a pasuk from Bamidbar, and he says it's a mitzvah to carry it on the shoulder because it says the holy service is upon them and on its their shoulder they shall carry it. Okay. So, what do we learn from Uza? We learn that Hashem doesn't need our help. And that if we... And it's like a really important lesson that we really need to reclaim from the original source where I first heard it. And we need to remind ourselves when we feel like we're trying to interfere too much in our lives, our children's lives, our friends' lives, that don't be an Uzza. Hashem's in control. And there are proper protocols and ways of doing things. And when you go through the proper protocols, then you can help things along. But when you don't, and you're panicking and going just by your instincts, and you're in the presence of holiness, then you're really putting yourself and everyone else in danger. David was putting Uzza in danger, and he took responsibility for that. Yeah, Jesse?
It's really interesting. It seems like on the one hand, when David is recognizing that Yira is a lower level than Ahava, that on the one hand, that it's not such a... Not that it's not a good thing to have Yira, but that it's just not ideal, meaning there's a higher level. But on the other hand, this lesson is kind of telling us, like, you should have Yira when you're around...
Right.
Yeah.
And, and the Tanya, the Alter Rebbe, actually describes Yira and Ahava as the two wings. You need them both. So David needs to be reminded of the necessity of Yira. He needs to go back to that stage so that he can build on Yira to achieve Ahava. Because true Ahava without Yira is not, also, it leads to this.
Right, like it's a foundation. Excellent. That he just didn't recognize.
Yeah.
Especially when you look back at the Misachakim and the, like there's that loving, you know, but that's not always the appropriate. There has to be something underneath
that. And we're going to see next week that David really does achieve that because he is going to go back and he is going to take the Aron and there is going to be joyousness and there's going to be dancing to the extent that Michal yells at him. But Michal's punished for yelling at him because David, in the next saf of the section, it has recognized the Yira and built on that to restore himself to the proper Ahava. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to stop the recording.